You may not know this, but Australia's third largest export is international education, and our highest intake of international students come from China. And with me today is sociologist and lecturer at the University of South Australia, Hannah Sung. Hannah has been to Shanghai to speak with dozens of Chinese parents about their choice to send their children to Australia to study. And Hannah, welcome to Life Matters.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Hannah, there's been a rise in the number of Chinese students coming to Australia over the last decade. Why particularly here, and why that kind of increase?
Yes. Well, part of this is based on my previous research that I did on international student migration that look at their strategies for migration and experiences in Australia. And I found that, you know, one of the reasons they wanted to study here is so that, you know, they can get permanent residency as a possible option, but it's not the main driver. As we know from recent data, from 2000 to 2014, only 16% of the international students received permanent residency. So I was just curious, you know, that behind this, individual international students are actually aspirations of their parents who do provide them the financial resources and emotional support. So I was curious, you know, as to why, you know, these parents, this affluent middle class Chinese families that I've observed, in particularly in Shanghai, sending their children for overseas education. What aspirations do they have for their children?
So you went to Shanghai and you spoke to, I think, more than 40 families over there. What did you discover?
Well, interestingly, what happened is how I started with this study was I was wanting to look at, you know, how the education landscape in Shanghai is changing, where there are increasingly more schools having this international national kind of curriculum that's run under a private independent organization, which aims to promote a bilingual stream model, a mission of mixing East meets West curriculum, where their local students are taught by the Chinese teachers in maths, in Chinese language and values education.
Right.
But at the same time, the Chinese students are also offered a range of Western curriculum, such as International Baccalaureate or British curriculum, taught by Western expatriate teachers.
And these bilingual schools, sorry to interrupt, Hannah, but these bilingual schools, I understand, go from kindergarten through to senior high school, do they?
Yes, you're right. Yes, from kindergarten to year 12 to. And so what happened is that these expatriate teachers, they co-teach with the Chinese bilingual teachers in subjects like arts, music, physical education, science, and even this philosophy for inquiry. So I was curious about why, you know, this shift, and hence I decided to interview the parents of this aspirations they have for the children. And surprisingly, a portion of these parents, they themselves have told me that they've gone overseas for further studies, and they actually value what they hope the children will learn from this Western education is for global outlook and being globally oriented through the Western education, Western way of thinking.
So, Hannah, just on that point, are they expecting their children to return to China, or are they in part also thinking they may become global citizens and travel the world?
Yes, because I'm talking to this privileged group of affluent middle-class parents, and that's what they hope, that the children, first of all, through the, you know, these international and national curriculum and schools, they can still, they will become citizens who are able to live in more than one single culture, and they want them to increase their competitive edge by learning multiple ways of understanding the world through language, learning, arts and inquiry. So one of the parents was telling me that, you know, as you know, the world is more than one nation. So this is a shift in how parents, affluent parents, are thinking of. When I asked them, so where did you get this idea from? You know, what? And then they were telling me that they were once international students in United States, in UK, and in Australia.
Right.
So they obviously, these returned Chinese international students who are now doing really well in Shanghai, they would like this kind of overseas education for the kids becomes a family project because they did not get to migrate themselves.
My guest is sociologist and lecturer at University of South Australia, Hannah Sung. Hannah's conducted significant research into Chinese international students and their parents. I want to talk, Hannah, about some of the stereotyping something of our perceptions around Chinese parents as well, if I may, because there's that term tiger parents. These are the parents yes. who have high aspirations for their children and drive their children accordingly. But there's another mm-hmm. term, I think, applied to this behaviour called chicken blood parenting.
Yes,
you better
that's
explain
right.
that. Yeah.
Okay, so when I interviewed the parents, they were saying, "Oh no, I don't belong to you know these parents who have chicken blood," and so I was really curious. I say, "What did you mean by not being part of this chicken blood parents group?" And there was, and then they'd explain to me there's a historical context. You know, in ancient China, there's lots of battles going on. So what happened is before the army went to battle against each other, the foot soldiers had to drink chicken blood to boost their morale. So in that context, what they're saying is that I'm not the kind of parents who would like to boost, you know, academic achievement in the children just because, you know, this is what's happening in many other parents who see the value of making sure that, you know, the children performed well academically.
Is that because there's some evidence mounting, though, that those parents who drive their international children hard in various universities, such as the ones we have in Australia, don't get the kind of results they were hoping for?
Yes and no. But what I'm saying is that they see education more than just achieving academic results, because maybe because that's one thing I'm curious about is for these affluent middle class parents, is that they see that the value of a balanced education for the kids, for the
right.
children. That's why they send them to these international national schools where they want the children to enjoy childhood. That's literally what this told me. Which is really interesting and really fascinating to hear that.
Well,
and
I was going to say, Hannah, let's hear from some of the students themselves, because their experiences are important. And this is one of those international students from China. His name's Vincent Gong.
I do face a particular kind of pressure, which is about the language, because I am a second language, English as a second language speaker. So when during the placement, it's really hard for me to change my Chinese logic speaking immediately into English version. So that makes me feel under a high pressure, actually.
Yes, you can hear Vincent sounding quite under high pressure then when it comes. In talking to both families, Hannah, and to students themselves, both in China and in Australia, did they talk about how they felt sometimes a little separated from Australian culture because of language?
Yes, they do. I mean, I do, as an academic, I do interact with the international students, and they do share with me high levels of stress in navigating a new culture, in adjusting to a new academic systems, and also in the lack of social integration with the local community.
So they want more integration. They're looking for that when they come to study in Australia.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because this is how they can learn to become citizens who increasingly they are just looking at beyond living in one single culture. They want to look at how they can be part of a global-oriented citizen here.
And so are they telling you, Hannah, in your research, that in fact mm-hmm. when they get to these campuses of universities in this country, that they're just not meeting local people to talk about local affairs, local events, local culture?
Yes, I'm afraid so. That's why, you know, we have international students that add so much richness to the diversity of our student body. But I think as universities, we need to do more to place measures to support not just the staff, but also our international students and our local students in intercultural competence.
Okay, so there's obviously some work to be done there. And on that
yes.
very matter, let's have another listen to a voice memo that was sent to us by Zhao Li.
I came here to study in Australia because, first of all, Australia is a quite attractive place to live in and travel to. The weather here is pleasant and the beaches are quite nice and people here are also friendly. Another reason is that because previously I got a degree from Flinders University, that's why I was particularly interested in Australia, especially I was always wondering what Adelaide is like. That's why I chose Adelaide to further my study. I certainly have faced some pressures here. The first can serve for most international students, I think, is the cultural difference, including the language barrier. I quite often found myself keeping at least half of my thoughts or feelings to myself because I didn't know how to express them in English in a friendly way, not because I didn't want to express them. The other thing that I experienced is sometimes a few people hold prejudice against international students. I think this is mainly because people don't communicate with each other that much, so they sometimes find it quite hard to understand each other's actions. So I think communicating more and being more open-minded certainly can help this.
That's Chinese international student Zhao Li talking about some of the issues she's faced while living and studying in Australia. With me is Hannah Sung. And Hannah, what have students that you've spoken to been talking to you about regarding their mental health?
Michael, I didn't have a research that I did about mental health per se. I'm not an expert in that, but
anecdotally, I'm sure people have said things. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. But I really see that the culture shock is still prevalent in the experiences of the international students. So, you know, we just have to make sure that we put in place measures to support our students, our international students, and to make, you know, in order for Australia to remain a destination of world-class education for Chinese students, we need to be far more long-sighted and self-reflective mm-hmm. about what we offer them. You know, they as international students, you know, they just, they not only give us boundless opportunities culturally and economically, but you know we need to be able to offer them a worthwhile experience and opportunity in return.
Do you get the sense that the students you spoke to know how much they're worth to the Australian economy?
Yes, to some extent they do realise that. They do know because they read, you know, press, they read articles, they do understand that we rely a lot on international students for our economy. Yes.
All right.
They are very aware of that.
Okay.
Yes.
and so, I mean, there's that pragmatic side of things, but also if academically and emotionally they're going to feel supported, what do we need to do in the future?
Well, one of which is, you know, well, as an academic, what I believe we need to do is to provide not just language support, but I think language is not just the only thing. Mm. We also have to make sure that we give them opportunities. So, for instance, the students that I teach, I give them opportunities to go to the actual sites, you know, the local communities, to interact with the people there, to have this, and also to support them in a scaffolded kind of way where, okay, what do you think this is happening in this kind of context? You know, give them the tools to actually learn how to think through their experiences and to be able to have some vocabulary to articulate that because they want to be understood. It's not that they are not trying,
yep.
But the thing is we need to be able to provide them not just a language class, but I think it's more so about interactions with people in the local community, with our local students. I think our local students need to be more open-minded in terms of, you know, not seeing them as the other, but
yes.
To have that interactions to just, you know, just as our local students who have gone overseas, who travel in Asia and in Europe, they've experienced what is it like to be a sojourner, to be a tourist. They felt welcome in those countries. We need to do the same for our international students.
Indeed.
Yes, absolutely.
Hannah, thank you very much for that. Hannah is a sociologist and lecturer at the University of South Australia. She's researched a great deal about Chinese international students and their parents and how they feel about studying in a foreign country like Australia. Hannah, thank you very much. And of course, you can deep dive into the history and exploration of Australia-Chinese relations throughout RN this week in our China in Focus theme, which is on the RN website as well. This is Life Matters.